A chaotic scene in the streets, one of the first parades as Pride Month begins. But this clash between pro-Palestinian protesters and LGBTQ activists is just one of the battles between the LGBTQ community and the rest of society, with some wondering if all of this pandering done by businesses and politicians is starting to backfire. What level of pride still exists in Pride Month, and is it still justified in the world today? I'm Skynell Hughes, and this is Perspective. In 1969, following a raid by the City of New York Police Department on the known gay bar called the Stonewall Inn, riots ensued for 5 days between police and protesters. Now, at the time, the New York Liquor Authority refused to give liquor licenses to those bars known for serving the gay community. This single event was seen as the turning point for the fight for rights for members of the lesbian, gay, and transgender community. Now, homosexual acts remained illegal in every state except Illinois at that time, and bars and restaurants could get shut down for having gay employees or serving gay patrons. Now, 55 years later, to commemorate not only the events at the Stonewall Inn, but the legal and social gains by the LGBTQ community, the entire month of June is recognized as Pride Month. Now, in America, the LGBTQ community are the most advanced in the world. Americans who are members of the LGBT community from the legal perspective are said to be protected from discrimination in employment, housing, and access to public accommodations. And in 2015, same-sex marriage was made legal in every state. Yet while in the eyes of the law, equality seems to exist for the lesbian and gay community, the new fight by the movement involving the members of the transgender community, laws banning gender affirmation care for transgender minors are on the books in 25 states. Plus, states are taking steps to keep transgender athletes only competing in a sport or the use of bathroom facilities in the gender they were born with. This battle is continuing to escalate. However, it is also splitting the LGBTQ community. One of the most known members of the transgender community who happens to be an Olympic athlete is Caitlyn Jenner, who believes transgender athletes should not be able to compete in women's sports.
It's amazing how much flack I get, and all I'm trying to do is protect women. There are massive advantages and undeniable differences from male development, basically going through male puberty.
So there's a lot we need to discuss. And how much pride does America really have in the LGBTQ community? And is it starting to divide Americans more than unite? So let's bring in our guest for the perspective. Charles Moran, the national president of the Log Cabin Republicans, and Dr. Steve Turley, scholar, author, and host of TurleyTalks.com. And Alice Roque, who is the executive director of the Ali Forney Center. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen, on the beginning of Pride Month and the conversation that needs to be had, not only in America, but around the world today. I actually want to start with you on this one. Let's go with Alex. What is it like to be a gay man in America today?
It's disheartening. It's disheartening to be a citizen of a country that chooses to restrict your rights, attack your existence because of how you were born. And it's disheartening to live in a society that furthermore believes it's okay to reject children because of their LGBTQ identity, and to see thousands of homeless LGBTQ youth on our streets because of family rejection. We've come a long way in our fight, and we've taken really awful steps back that are really hurting our community.
And when you speak to our community, are you talking about the lesbian gay community or the transgender, or do you see them all being the same?
All being the same. We are the LGBTQ plus community.
Okay, I'm going to bring in Charles to this one. You know, a few things were mentioned there, but Charles, I have to ask you, he mentioned we've taken a few steps forwards. How do you think this is different from what members of the gay community, and let me just point out, you're young, so you might not have existed back in the 1970s, 1960s, 70s, when this was really starting to come to fruition. What is it different today than what maybe those in 50 years ago experienced within the gay community?
Well, and arguably, the LGBT rights movement in this country has moved faster than any other civil rights movement in history. And today in America, this is actually the best place in the world to be a member of the LGBTQ community. But it's also known that as we have continued to secure these rights and freedoms, for example, and all the things that you listed off, like public accommodations, housing, job discrimination, the ability to serve in the military, and ultimately the right to marry, you know, there are certain elements of people in the community who want to continue to push and are looking for the next final frontier of things to fight on. And that's when you see real divergence in the community about, you know, have we achieved everything we needed to form a more perfect union? And I would argue that elements of our community have been hijacked, you know, pushing radical gender theory and some other things that are really social contagions masquerading as an equality fight, which they are not.
Well, and that's what I want to bring in, equality. I want to bring in actually Dr. Turley on this. Steve Turley, you know, what role has politics played, do you think, within this movement, within the gay rights movement, as well as the acceptance of those who are not?
It's a very good question, and I appreciate so much being on with Alex and Charles. I so value their perspective here. Yeah, I think I'm siding a little bit more with Charles on this, because I think the issue of liberty is the one that we all want and that we're all championing. But there is also the specter of repression that's behind both narratives, and I narrative for emancipation for the LGBTQ community, or are they actually the perpetuators of repression? And, you know, I loved your opening that you had there with Stonewall Inn. I mean, Pride Month was originally associated with the triumph of liberty and equality. And there is an increasing sense among a growing number of people, for right or for wrong, that that's just not the case anymore. I'm thinking of a very good article by Philip Klein, who analyzed the distinction between why gay rights was so successful, but transgenderism is banging against the wall. And I think Charles alluded to it there. Klein argues that the reasons why gay rights were so successful in America is because they promoted the notion of liberty. For right or for wrong, regardless of your perspective on it, that was a successful libertarian dynamic in the movement. However, when it comes to what's commonly referred to as wokeness, or what's technically known as cultural socialism, there's an increasing sense that the demands being made are actually about decreasing liberty, such as denouncing dissent and silencing critics and destroying women's sports and demanding compliance and stigmatizing half the population as racists and all kinds of phobes and the like. And that comes from the nature of identity politics itself, where the identity is seen as all-encompassing and absolute. And so now there's no way that I can have an affinity with a group without at the same time embracing their politics. So dissent in that sense is no longer tolerated. And I think that's the key difference. One movement celebrated liberty, while for many others, the new movement is celebrating repression.
Alex, how do you see it and the role politics plays within the movement, both in the past but in the future?
You know, the politics, the impact of politics in our movement have really been dependent on the views of our political leaders at the time. And what we're seeing today is conservative anti-LGBTQ views that are really hurting our community. There's so many stats on how these political attacks, over 543 anti-LGBTQ bills introduced in our country last year, 519 anti-LGBTQ bills introduced this year, and it's only June 4th. Is really damaging, and it really calls into question, you know, how we're deciding on elected officials and the decisions and control they get to have on our community. You know, this is a question of how you're born. This is a creation of a person and should be respected and honored and loved regardless of rights or politics that we want to, you know, try to argue for or against.
Okay, so Charles, interesting, because you actually represent, your national president of the Log Cabin Republicans, a conservative organization made with members of this community. I don't know if many people are aware that there is a large group of the homosexual community who are Republicans. I want you first to tell us a little bit about the organization And are you embraced by your fellow Republicans? And are you still embraced by all gays just because you identify as a conservative? As other demographics have said, they've been ostracized if they did not go along with the traditional ideology.
Right. Well, and thanks for asking the question. And without having to get into too much of a history lesson about our organization, we were founded at the behest of then Governor Ronald Reagan in California in the fight around the Briggs Initiative, which would have criminalized open homosexuals from, or prohibited open homosexuals from teaching in public schools. Ronald Reagan opposed that. It was the first ballot box victory by the LGBT community, and it happened in large part because of Republican Ronald Reagan. Flash forward to today, when we've got people like Donald Trump, who is the first president ever elected to public office, who supported gay marriage and LGBT inclusion. So it's not a shock to see that actually about a third of the LGBT community actually voted for Donald Trump in the 2020 election, which was a doubling from the previous election. And we still see that there's a lot of political diversity in the LGBT community, even though the left would like you to think that it votes as a monolith. And as we're looking at the modern Republican Party and the modern conservative movement, one of the things that I tell people is we believe in traditional family values, but that includes our families too. And you can have, you know, there's so much more acceptance in the conservative movement. If you look at things like the most recent past legislation that codifies gay marriage federally, that would not have happened without the critical votes from Republicans in the Senate. It happened with a large number of Republicans in the House of Representatives. So in the Republican Party and the conservative movement, there's an understanding that, you know, equality and freedom and liberty are things that we have equal access to and should as members of the LGBT community. But again, what we're seeing is this rapid push towards radical gender theory and some trans extremism. As much as the left would like you to think that this involves the entire LGBT community, it does not. And I'm not separating out the T. I include the LGBT, the T's in the entire phrase, and they're a part of our community. But again, this is about, you know, creating some guardrails around these issues. To your point, preserving women's sports in Title IX, protecting women's spaces, parental consent, which is something that a vast majority of Americans believe in, which is not anti-LGBT, and no permanent gender transition under the age of 18. If you can't get a tattoo, you can't engage in some of these life-altering procedures. This is not, I don't consider it moderate, I don't consider it centrist, I consider it common sense. This is where a vast majority of Americans are. And extremists on the left who want to redefine society in their own warped image are trying to make people think that these are unreasonable guardrails around our participation in society, and they are not unreasonable.
Well, I want to continue this conversation and get your response to that, Alex, when we come back, because we do have a break. You know, June is considered Pride Month. However, did some stores take it too far and thus deserve these boycotts and backlashes that it received in the past? We're going to continue this discussion and more after the break.
Known in Vietnam as the American War, the Vietnam War lasted for almost two decades and dragged in numerous countries.
Nhưng mà người cầm đầu của Mỹ nói rằng sang Việt Nam là như thế giúp Việt Nam. Và chỉ còn anh em thì không thống kê được.
Hundreds of thousands of American troops were sent to the country to back the South Vietnamese Army.
Má bay rồi nó xả.
American soldiers murdered resistors mercilessly, burned down entire villages, and spread dangerous chemicals.
Cần nghĩ lại những người Mỹ, những người lính Mỹ rất trẻ và họ nhận thức không hết.
Did the Americans ever fully acknowledge what they did, and are the Vietnamese veterans ready to forgive?
Chả nhận là gia đình chúng tôi bắt mất.
Welcome back to Perspective. I'm your host, Skye Nell Hughes. I want to bring back in our panel, Charles Moran, the national president of the Log Cabin Republicans, Dr. Steve Turley, scholar and author and host of TurleyTalks.com, and Alex Roque, who is the executive director of the Allie Forney Center. Thank you so much for the conversation. Before the break, Steve kind of, or we had Charles kind of broke down where the Log Cabin Republicans stand. I actually want to go to you on this one, Alex, because the month of June was first designated in 1999 by President Bill Clinton as Gay and Lesbian Pride Month. 2009, President Obama declared it Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Month. Is it right to broad brush group all of these together, as the majority of the changes that kind of identify as woke and polarized really has to do with only one letter of that alphabet?
You know, I'm sorry, I need to respond to something Charles said. Charles made comments about the rights and protections of young people under the age of 18. If you can't get a tattoo, you can't engage in gender-affirming care. And I think it's really important to look at the science. Where is the science as it relates to the care of young people who are born in a body that doesn't agree with their identity? And that is incredibly important. Like, limiting young people and making these decisions, political decisions, and restricting families from being able to decide for their children what they want is very, very damaging. And there's a lot of data. The American Pediatric Society, the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, there's so much data on how gender-affirming care is life-saving for a young person. So I just want to respond to that, Charles. I think it's really important to back up political desires or political wishes or political opinions with where the science is. Like, what do we know? And if our country had done this in the 50s and 60s when they were banning gay people from dancing together at bars and nightclubs and being married, and you went back to the science, you'd understand that there's nothing wrong with gay people. And it took us forever to get the designation of LGBTQ or homosexuality as a psychiatric condition. So there's science that supports us. So I just needed to respond to that. And I'm sorry, Scotty. Can you repeat your question? I'm sorry, if you can repeat your question, I'm sorry.
I said, do you want to group all of them together? And let me just point out the science, and this is the thing, you were talking about the science. You know, the science does show that over the transgender children who decided it early are more than likely to commit suicide than those that are not. We're finding those are higher levels. We can't let our kids, I can't let my daughter get an ears pierced without having me there to sign for it. Can't do any alterations to her body without me as her parent there to help her decide. Why should gender transformation be any different? And why is their brains even developed enough to know what they decide? I mean, they're still wearing tennis shoes to church and to formal events. That's how developed their brains are at 16.
I mean, that's really, when you're talking about the science behind it, I don't agree with, I don't know what data point you're pointing at, that young people who have gender affirming care have higher rates of suicide. That's not what the number of leading American associations have indicated in a number of studies dating back to 2017. And for some young people, or for a majority of young people, in fact, the reason why we run this organization is for a majority of young people, they are not affirmed or cared for by their families. In fact, 90% of the kids that we see are unhoused because of family rejection, because of homophobia and transphobia by their parents. So how do we deny them care when this is the one single thing that can help them affirm their identity, can save them? And we know that the data shows us that they actually do better emotionally, mentally, and in so many other settings.
Well, it's actually the National Institute of Health, 32% to 52% higher rate of suicide for those within that category. But I digress. We can have that debate later. I do want to ask, I'm going to bring in Dr. Turley on this one, because if this goal was to fight for equality, then does designating, do you think, an entire month for a demographic of society where not every group gets the same designation also create some ostracization for others?
Well, that's the concern. That's where you get into the cultural socialism, as it were, what's technically known as wokeness. And again, we're just getting some scholarship on this. Eric Kaufman of the University of London is doing a lot of work on that. The basic framework for cultural socialism is twofold. So first, cultural scientists believe that historically marginalized groups, marginalized because of their race, their gender, their sexuality, have to have equal outcomes in order for our society to be considered just and equitable. So whether that's money, power, affluence, career, marriage, whatever, that equity needs to be the overall concern for a just society. And then secondly, and what's key here for your question, is the belief that those who have been marginalized and oppressed historically have been excluded not so much by class or by economics, as the Marxism of old would argue, but rather by cultural norms and narratives and symbols. So the words we use, the way we teach history in our schools, the way we name buildings, the way we organize the calendar and the holidays we celebrate, right? These are all subtle means by which we intentionally or unintentionally discriminate against and disenfranchise these groups. And so justice requires that we redefine things like the calendar and how we teach history and sexual relationships in our schools in order to include these otherwise disenfranchised groups. Again, the concern with that, that's basically the structure of what's behind it. The concern here is that cultural socialism, or wokeness as it's more commonly known, it sanctifies, it makes sacred these historically marginalized groups, these racial, gender, and sexual identity groups, which in turn forms a new kind of caste system, which scholars like Joel Kotkin of Chapman University refers to as neo-feudalism, where these sanctified groups are given special rights and privileges that no other group has. And those other groups are the historically oppressing groups, namely white, heterosexual men. And they're subject to incessant stigmatization throughout our higher culture because they're constantly accused of being racist, patriarchal, cis-sexist, and the like. So today, disparaging and derogatory things can openly be said about white Christian men, for example, that could never possibly be said openly about any other identity group. Jewish students are finding this out the hard way on college campuses right now. And so inexorably, cultural socialism does not solve discrimination or oppression. It simply inverts it and replaces one exclusionary caste system for another, and is thereby guilty of perpetuating the very injustice it purportedly resolves.
Well, and that's what I want to talk about, these various groups. You know, Charles, I kind of asked you, how is the Republican Party embracing the gay and lesbian community within the party itself? I don't think many are aware that the largest group that actually rose in demographic in the 2020 election was the homosexual community voting in the Republican for Donald Trump. That's the only demographic that actually grew in 2020 for Donald Trump. But what is the rest of the RNC, those family organizations, how are they embracing members like yourself that have the family values as your core?
I mean, the most important thing about this whole conversation is we just wanted to be treated the same as anybody else. I don't need a special flag. I don't need a special color or symbol on said flag. I don't need a month. I don't even need a day. I need the equal opportunity to fight for jobs. I need the equal opportunity to compete in the marketplace. I just need equal opportunity. I don't need an equal outcome. So we're talking about equality, not equity. And this is something that, again, it was so, you know, we were so thankful for Donald Trump's leadership because, again, coming from a place like New York, which was socially embracing, and given his background philanthropically and business-wise, as somebody who just is looking to hire the best person for a job or task the right person for a responsibility, that's all I'm looking for. I'm thankful and I'm so appreciative for the fights that have had to be waged in this country up to this point. We would not have achieved any of this without any of that sacrifice. But to say that the fight and the struggle today is as equal or greater than when it was 5, 10, 20 years ago is absolutely wrong. And this is where, again, you know, when we were talking about whether or not you've got to have these special months, because we've got to call out gays and lesbians are across every swath of our community. They are in our religious spaces. They're in our business spaces. They're in our families. We're special, but we're not that special, and we're not that rare anymore. And in fact, that's why even with some of these pride parades, I mean, we need a kind of whole month just to schedule everything. But it's not something that we need to function equally in society. We want the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities than everyone else. So we should be treated the same as everyone else, not with any other kind of special distinction, like needing a special flag with tons of different logos on it, or even needing an entire month to celebrate our history. Our history is part of America's history, and we need to understand that both in the good side and the bad side.
Alex, your thoughts on that?
You know, I think you're speaking from a point of a place of privilege, Charles. I think that the community has largely represented you and you've never been on the outskirts of the community. And I think when you talk about the evolution of our flag and what it means, it's because it has historically disenfranchised members of the community. It has historically only spoken to white cisgender men. When you talk about the civil rights movement, the gay rights movement, Stonewall riots, like it was the white gay men who were like let go by the police, and it was the black, largely brown and trans kids who were arrested by the police. So you kind of have always had a pass. And you don't know that bias if you don't live in a skin that's not yours. And I speak the same conversely. I don't know what it's like to be a white man in America, especially today. So I think that it's important that our community evolve and that our community represent and have the visibility of all its members. And if there's a need to update our flag again because of another community that's been disenfranchised, I think it's really important that we do that.
You know, Charles, do you respond to that? You know, speaking from privilege, I think that's I usually don't like to actually have them throw darts at each other on my show, but can you see the divide that's happening within the gay and lesbian community, the LGBTQ community, and does that help or hurt the situation moving forward in fighting for any equality that is left to remain to be fought for?
I mean, intersectionality is a core tenet of cultural Marxism. You know, that the injustices of one are something that are shared by all. We as conservatives fundamentally reject intersectionality as a tool for social order. So while I don't disagree with the thought process that was just presented, because it makes sense with that line, I just completely reject it. This issue of, you know, privilege, and if you aren't a member of one community, you can't understand the true challenges and hardships of another. We would have, as a country, never climbed out of the racist, misogynistic past if we had not been able to actually understand the challenges of people in another community. But to say that we are consistently limited by our race or our gender, what do they say? It's your pigment and your plumbing. To be consistently obsessed with this, you know, thought that there's just this consistent stream of inequality in society, and until all are defeated, none are defeated, that's just, again, more politics of division and anger and hatred, which is what we see from the left, versus something that talks about our unity. Ronald Reagan said it best, 80% my friend is not 20% my enemy, and I'm not going to continue to wage warfare when there's so much to be benefited. A high tide raises all boats. I want to fight, and I think that, you know, conservatives in this country are looking to fight to create a better place for all families, LGBT included, for all businesses, LGBT included. And again, it's 2024. We've really moved beyond a lot of this, but there are definitely, you know, as we're seeing in some of the right. things that have come out from this legislation, there's some real challenges about, you know, how the bureaucracy is infusing hate and division amongst our social institutions.
Well, I hate the show is over because I would love to continue the discussion. Might be again. June is a whole entire month. Thank you so much to our panel, Charles Moran, Dr. Steve Turley, scholar, and Alex Roque. Life is anything but fair, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to at least push for its impartial laws. Discrimination can never be completely outlawed, but that doesn't mean a society shouldn't strive to level the playing field. That being said, there is a difference between fighting for rights to be equal and fighting to tip the scale in your favor, causing discrimination to the other side. This is an even bigger wrong if done so not by changes in the law, rather by bullying and pressure by society to submit. Sadly, what is happening with the argument for equal rights for the gay community is being usurped by the extremists within the movement. These extremists want to exist outside the rules of decency and modesty, which are in the place for the majority of those in the heterosexual community. This is how the fight for equal rights goes from being a legal issue to being a moral issue. And pushback against any change becomes an even greater rally cry. In Eagle, Idaho, a conservative bar is hosting a heterosexual Pride Month with a free beer and 15% off for straight couples in June. As expected, this has received a lot of negative press, including the local paper, the Idaho Statesman, who called the restaurant transphobic. The owner refused to back down and will continue this version of his pride. This bar owner would not have been convicted to make such a move if the alphabet soup crowd had not tried to be so obnoxious and pushed for their demographic to be rewarded over another. You see, it's one thing to give a discount to someone who has achieved or accomplished a goal, service to one's country, reaching senior status, attending a school, etc. All good reasons. However, I don't think giving a reward, or for that matter, any different treatment based on who you sleep with, is a step in the right direction for either side. This has been Perspective. I'm Skynell Hughes. Thank you for watching.